Conscious Living and Power Radio. Hi there. It's been a little while to reconnect and pick up where we left off. I'll give you a little bit more of the book. But first, I want to say a lot of this stuff that I do with the Nightlights and with my own intuitive stuff and working with my guides and all that, it changes. And so when I first wrote Talking to Nightlights in 1998, the first few paragraphs, sentences, pages, that channeling, it came through in about 2 weeks. And it was like a download. Everything was there. I was connecting and the whole nine yards. It was all brand new. I had no idea what to expect. I didn't know other people did it. I didn't have any previous idea or awareness that there was a spiritualism movement that would probably have helped me a whole lot if I knew about it. And even in my own background, I had a great aunt who had a yard sign that said psychic back in the 30s and 40s. And so this is, for me, going through it was a learning experience. And a lot has happened since then. So just to kind of go forward from there, I'll read part of the book because I started that. And just to give you a little bit more of an introduction. But I also want to talk about the ongoing process. When you learn how to connect with your, whatever you want to call them, guardians, spirit guides, angels, helpers, everybody does it differently. But automatic writing is, for me, one of the best ways to access that. And meditation is a good way to quiet your mind enough to be able to discern when you're writing, whether it's coming from that ego, that constant chatter that's in there saying all the things, the judgment and I shoulds, I wish, all the stuff that basically connects you to the materialist viewpoint, all of the expectations, the things that have you locked in hook, line, and sinker to 9 to 5. And that's the best way I could describe it because 9 to 5 is a routine. It's in Western culture, it's an expectation that you are going to fulfill a certain role in society that most everybody will consider as an acceptable and okay and normal role, whatever that label happens to be. Teacher, mechanic, corporate boardroom exec, you know, all that stuff. Those are labels. The thing is, when you get into working with this other, the spiritual aspect, the non-corporeal aspect, then there's a whole different world that opens up. And some people are lucky. They have this from the time that they're little and they don't block it and they don't have anybody around them to block it and to tell them that that's unnatural or it's unhealthy or it's sinful or, you know, some kind of judgment that says you are not okay. Usually it has an element of shaming with there's something about you that's abnormal and we need to fix it. Okay. Now, a lot of times that's just because of the lack of awareness of what is normal and what is natural when it comes to experiencing entities, seeing ghosts, and being somebody who is psychic or having another ability to connect firsthand with your grandpa or your grandma or the neighbor next door, whoever crossed over and was coming to visit you and said, I'd like you to tell so-and-so I'm okay. You have no idea what's happening. Sometimes the child doesn't know that the adults can't see whoever it is that's showing up. And Aunt Margaret doesn't go away because she's supposed to be helping. Raise the awareness, raise the vibration, the frequency. Help that child learn and develop because nobody in the physical world can. And so with my spirit helpers, I fortunately had family who was receptive, and so I could share some of this. Again, it was a complete surprise. And even though I had begun doing my own version of automatic writing and I had the book on opening to channel, I brought that, 10 years before this happened. And when I first did a meditation session asking to hear my guides and to connect, and I was meditating and I remember the moment when it said, we're here. And that was a completely unexpected, I was thinking one. And so the minute I heard we, And what would you like to know? Let's back up. I told my grandmother, and she was very familiar with all of that, the spirit plane, and she was an astrologer, really good with her astrology, and of course, you know, all the charts for us, for the kids and the family, were done to see where we were going to stack up, you know. Whether we did or not, that's beside the point. But at the same time, I learned a lot from her and the Stack of Fate magazines and all the other stuff and pyramids. You know, she had everything. And she also had, she knew how to manifest. She was studying some of the new thought movement, the beliefs that you empower yourself by what you think and you can manifest. And so she manifested things in her life. And then by doing that, demonstrated to me that it could be done. And so when she wanted something, she told me she would draw a picture of it and then focus on that picture and begin to see it as that happening. There's a difference between control and with allowing and with projecting and with creating and all that. So part of it is, it isn't meant to, in any way, shape, or form, take control over somebody else. These are things you personally are trying to shift, achieve, and maneuver for yourself. And Helen Hansel, when I interviewed her, she called it wishcraft, because it's the art of making something happen, and you are actively engaging your own manifesting abilities, your mind, and focusing your thoughts to achieve a certain result. And so my grandmother was very fluent in that language. And so when I told her that I had connected with my guides and they said, we, and I was like, okay, Grandma, what do I do? And she said, take it slow. That's a good piece of advice. So when these things start happening, when you start connecting and you hear other voices, elementals, have visions or dreams, or any of that is possible, any and all, the first thing to do is to step back and allow that this is a new way to be and see in the world. And there will be mistakes. You will jump to wrong conclusions, but you will learn. Then you will grow. That's the most important thing I can say, is that you will learn and you will grow. And mistakes are part of the process. I'm actually going to be doing a presentation at a local in Kansas City. That's where I'm in the Midwest. I don't know where you're listening, but Midwest. And 25th of May, I think, is the date we've got scheduled, 2:00. And I'll do a presentation, just a short, like a mini, hi, this is who I am, this is what I do. And readings for people who are there. Yes, there is a fee. I'll also have some books, and I kept some backlog so I could give them out if I went anywhere. So I've got a box or two. But the part of it that I enjoy is seeing people face to face, because a lot of times my connection, especially with my background in radio and doing audio, you know, podcasting and stuff, I don't see anybody. But I learned a long time ago working with spirit guides, that just because you don't see somebody doesn't mean there isn't a connection. And sometimes some of those connections are much more powerful, because you don't have the visual, the element, that then you start automatically going, well, too short, too tall, too fat, too, you know, too blonde, too whatever, too old, too young, all those things we do accidentally and in a programming way of automatically categorizing by visuals. And so that part is kind of fun, you know, when you see people in person, especially doing radio, and they're like, you're nothing like you sound. Well, that's in me, my way of thinking, thank you. I hope the sound is much better. And I hope that it made an impact that I wouldn't have been able to make if you had just been saying, okay, fix your makeup. That's part of what this is about, though, with the spirit plane, is that a lot of times we get information, we don't know where it's coming from. We can't go back and say, well, oh, this was an ET, so I don't want to listen to it, even though it's valid information. Or this was a leprechaun, or this was a spirit guide who happens to be an animal. All this stuff. There's none of that. There's just an energetic connection. And so you feel that vibe, and you can determine whether it's positive or negative contrary sometimes comes in handy because you need a lesson, and that's how it comes in. If they're giving you something to kind of trip you up or make you think twice about how gullible you can be. A lot of times that has to do with wanting to manifest something that you really, really, you don't need, but it would be nice and it would make things easier. And yet you might skip a few steps along the way that really would help you a whole lot more, because you'd have to learn tenacity and strength and courage and some of those other things that come along with not getting what you want immediately when you ask for it. But that's out there. And so working with guides and doing this kind of stuff, it's a constant learning process. So when I, you know, when I say what I do, I just say I'm an intuitive and I'm a conscious channel. That was one of the things when I first started working with the Nightlight, I wanted to be conscious. I didn't want to be somebody who was, go into a trance and I have no clue what came through me. I wanted to be accountable. I wanted to know that I could block it and that this didn't have to be just me like a puppet on a string. And that was how I chose to work with it. And it might be because I need that. I need that element of participation. So it's a co-creation and not just me allowing myself to go different directions. And I did, when I first learned, there were some characters, and I have transcripts when we were doing the sessions for my learning curve of allowing different entities to come through. And some of them were quite entertaining. They would have an accent, some kind of an affectation that wasn't me. But since I do have, I've had some acting classes, it was interesting that they were characters and they felt real. They also weren't necessarily an entity that was going to pass along information that could be helpful. They just wanted to be entertaining. And so that was interesting. And it was also educational, because I found out also when you channel energy that has a negative vibration, and in one instance, an entity that came through was very harsh and judgmental, and basically a control element was part of that. And as a result, I had an intense and immediate after effect of having the root chakra. It felt like I'd been bruised, like I had been kicked. I had that a bruise in my tailbone. And that was like, oh my gosh, that, because that was a very low level entity that I allowed to come through. And so there's a learning curve that goes along with this. And the channeling that I did at the beginning was to allow me to understand the variations. And when I first started, it was for individuals and for females. And then I started going to, my aunt, the person who helped me set this up, these sessions up, males. So there's a difference when you're channeling and when you're working with that, with the energy between men and women. And so I needed to be able to understand that. And it was so amazing to me, from what my perspective was, the energy was subtle and fluid, and the masculine energy was so much more powerful. It was almost like it was in my face. So I had to hold my ground and be very solid in what I was doing, not to get caught up in whatever the other energy was that was there that felt in some ways overpowering or just intense. And so that part of it was helpful. Okay, so then you, from there, go to small groups. And small groups would be, 6 to 10 at the most. And then from there, 80 on up. And because every time you add a person, you change the energy. And some people are more dynamic, and they're going to change the energy of the group. And not only do they show up, they bring their others, their guardians, their guides. And then there are the ones who are just the tourists who are going because, oh, there's a party. Like the ghosts who show up and they're not part of that original manifestation or haunting. They're just going because that's where the energy shines. Oh, cool. Something's happening here. Let's show up. So that part of it, I think this is all fascinating to me. But I do have to say, you really need to be aware of boundaries and grounding. And grounding is a matter of knowing your own core, knowing your own beliefs, knowing how solid you are. What do I believe? How will I address this if it shows up? At one point, my guide said, be ready, because I was going to do an event. And it was at a church. So it's a decent sacred, safe setting. But there would be someone who would be a contrarian, and basically somebody to show up and call me on my stuff. And so I thought, oh, well, that's great. It isn't. It isn't something you can anticipate, but what's worse is that you anticipate more than might be possible in terms of what could go bad. That's when you're going, okay, I've got this whole laundry list of how this might end. Well, I had learned at that point not to project that. Okay, don't self-sabotage. Just go ahead and know, all right, there will be a challenge. And so when the challenge showed up, somebody at the back of the room who was there, and it was so funny because this person who showed up was very obvious. They dressed different. It was much more dynamic personality. And all it was somebody who was incredibly fluid and dynamic in the way that they presented themselves. And so it was easy to be potentially overshadowed by that element because it was saying, is this what you believe? And does this work this way? And well, the fun thing is my answer was yes, because it wasn't to me, it didn't devalue what I was doing. It was simply a very broad and intense and direct question of, is this real? And my answer is, it's real for me. That's what I deal with. If it's real for me, I can have all of my answers. They may not be your answers. They may not be anybody else's answers. But I have to know what part of me is dealing with this. And that's where you become more solid and more self-aware when you deal with these non-corporeal entities and when you deal with this other element. Because in some ways, we're trying to categorize things. We haven't yet in some way acknowledged as existing. So when we're saying this is an ET and this is a ghost and this is a leprechaun, a fairy, whatever, there are some cases where when you're just learning, it's all one thing. It's either all devils, it's all angels, it's all whatever word you want to call, label, because you're trying to figure out what is real. And then you learn the categories from whatever your background is. So if you've come up in a certain religion, you're going to have certain names for things that makes sense for that religion, because that's where your background and your education is. And one of the first things I got from the guides was to start reading and start exploring and studying the different religions to understand perspectives. So that when somebody came to me and asked a question, is this real? Does this exist? Well, if it's in their faith, yes. It may not be something that I am conversant in, that's something that I deal with on a regular basis. But if it's in the person that I'm talking to, if it's in their background, then yes, that's a part of their reality. So how do we deal with that? You empower the person to address their own issues. How does it feel? Is it supportive? Is it helpful? Is it harmful? You start from there. And those are really basic places to start. So when I say I'm an intuitive and I'm a conscious channel, it means that I have worked and developed from a certain point ways of dealing with things that we don't always see and we can't always feel, but we can experience. And this is a recent event, so I can throw it in. Let me backtrack. The guides told me years ago to read a book on mesmerism. I'm like, okay. Because this is also, you know, learning about the other elements, the different religions and the beliefs. So I read the book on mesmerism, how it started and what it's about and how it is used. And it basically, just an overview, it's manipulating energy, okay? It's controlling and channeling and directing energy. That's just a sum up. So you'll see examples of it when somebody does hypnosis with a group and they try and, you know, what they'll do is they'll find the person who is most receptive. The energy that is most receptive, and that person isn't blocking them. They'll basically be, you know, real limp and limber, and they'll just do everything that the person, the hypnotist, says. They're highly suggestible, and we are in our own way. When you're watching a TV show, when you're watching, hearing a commercial, and you're not tuning it out, you're not really paying attention, it's going somewhere. It's programming. That's what this is. So basically, that mesmerism is also a form of programming. And you're programming somebody to be receptive, to do what you are suggesting. And as long as it doesn't go against their core belief, most likely they're going to fall into that. And some people will wake up quicker. Some people will never wake up and won't even know that they were hypnotized. That's how cool we are. We're all different. Okay, so with that, then I had an encounter out of the blue, unexpected, with a person who used that on me. And as I felt the energy come into me, I'm immediately going, aha. And so I shift and push the energy back to the person and say, with a smile and genuine concern and interest, that is amazing. You have a wonderful ability, but I'm sure you only use it with people who know what you can do and why you're doing it, with permission. Because that's a really important part of this. And in that instance, the person hadn't anticipated my response, nor did they anticipate that I would send the energy back. But that was a message to be aware that that was basically an attack, and in a way, a violation. There had been no permission, no warning, just an assumption that I would be impressed, and that this was a way of saying that this special trick, this special ability, would had power over me. Now, that's my interpretation, okay? But I see that as an abuse of power and in some way, imposition. Because there had been no warning, there hadn't been a, may I show you something? Hey, look, you can do this. Let me demonstrate. Anything like that. It was high and an immediate affront, an immediate engagement, which I was not prepared for, except that since I had read that information and knew what was going on, I could counter it immediately and address it. And then it took the power away, basically, because the person was, it was turnabout's fair play. Okay. See, gotcha. Watch it. But that kind of stuff happens. Okay. It's one of those amazing things. We don't always know when these, opportunities are going to present themselves. But my guides will give me a heads up. And in that vein, I got a heads up. I got a heads up recently. And so this was one of those interesting things. A lot's been happening, and the energy is shifting. It's been very dynamic. I remember last year sometime I was at the lake, and this incredible light is shining. I was on the couch, fell asleep on the couch. And so this light is shining in my eyes, and I was sound asleep. It woke me up, and I think, Andy, my husband, why are you shining this light in my face? And so I have my arm up, and I felt this little, like a feather, go across to wake me up. And then the light is in my eyes. And so I move my arm, and I'm, Andy, and I'm talking to him saying, what is with the light? And I realize there's nobody there. The light is the full moon shining through the skylight. And I'm absolutely, because I felt someone standing beside, I felt the energy of a presence. And I felt this feather go across my arm to get my attention. And so then I say, what is this about? And it said, there's magic in the moonlight. If you don't wake up, you'll miss it. Okay, there's magic in subtle energy. And the recent experience had to do with cluing me once again into the presence of subtle energy. And it was a way of saying, pay attention. Pay attention. something is happening. And that's what I'm doing. I'm paying attention, not knowing what I'm looking for, not knowing what will happen or that anything will happen. I thought I was just reading about subtle energy. It wasn't as blatant as the message with the other thing of mesmerism. It was just, here, read this, a suggestion that subtle energy is important right now. Now, the reason I say that at this time is because it's important for a lot of us. Subtle energy is always present. Does it have a meaning? Does it have a purpose? Does it have a message? When we start paying attention, a lot of times, that answer is yes. And that's when it gets really, really cool and fun and absolutely off the wall fantastic, because you start seeing things you overlooked and realize it's been happening all along. We just haven't been attuned to it. We haven't been playing along. We've been zoned out over an autopilot of 9 to 5. Okay, so I got to take a break, but I want to come back and pick up with that subtle energy message, because this was when it got really, really cool. We are not alone. No matter what it looks like, the physical body is real, but the other entities, essences, non-corporeals are also real. And we have to fine-tune our abilities to be able to be conversant, to be able to have a connection, to be conscious and aware. And you know what? Even though it doesn't look like it, that's what we're doing. Going to take a quick break. This is Conscious Living on Empower Radio. I'm Wendy Garrett. Back in a few.
Back to the dog show. Up next, we have Satchmo. Satchmo is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right, a group known especially for their couch snuggling, ball chasing, face licking, tail wagging, backyard hanging, and of course, companionship.
And what breed would you say Satchmo is?
I'd have to go with maybe a Labish Terrier Hound Chihuahua looking kind of mix.
Tremendous dog.
I'd also like to point out Satchmo's coloring, a white, gray, brown, black brindle, simply marvelous.
You know, it's such a treat to watch a dog like this.
Now, let's see him in action.
Look how he makes eye contact with his person.
That's actually known as the treat stare.
How intuitive. And now he appears to be excitedly turning in circles.
Ah, the happy dance, so common with this group.
And finally, the loving face lick.
It's great how he just gets in there and, well, licks.
Fantastic. But really, the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Satchmo is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt.
Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2 oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Listen to me, Shirley Jones. As soon as you get your diagnosis, go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
I'm John, a volunteer at United Way. I'm here at Lincoln Elementary School to find out what this place needs. Who knows better about what kids need than kids, right? Let's ask them.
Monsters!
Lasers!
A pool!
Another guinea pig!
More lasers!
Sprinkles!
I was thinking more spinach at lunchtime and maybe more exercise.
Nah.
Lasers are cool.
When it comes to creating healthier communities, what this place needs is you. To donate or volunteer, go to unitedway.org. Because great things happen when we live united. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Today, you ate Greek yogurt. You took the train.
You wondered why people spend so much time reading celebrity blogs. You read a celebrity blog. You planned a workout. You skipped it. You did all the things that one normally does the day before a devastating earthquake shakes the community to the ground. You never know when the day before is the day before. Prepare for tomorrow at ready.gov/today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Conscious Living and Power Radio. Hi there. Okay, we're back. And what I was getting into in terms of subtle energy also relates with that encounter with the light, because that was a very brief sensation of something like a feather touching my arm, and that immediate connect there. That's subtle energy. And I was half awake, half asleep. Well, actually, at that point, I was sound asleep. So it was waking me up with that touch. And then seeing the light, isn't that funny? The whole thing is a double, triple, multidimensional meaning. So there you go. And then that thing of seeing the light and thinking, oh my gosh, that was incredible. And sensing the something beside me. And then all of a sudden the space felt so empty. That, again, was an awareness that even when we think we're alone, if we open up and are more receptive to this other element, then you can sense the beings. You can sense the presence. Dogs and cats, my animals, are very good at that. And sometimes they don't like it because it's uncomfortable, it's unfamiliar, it's crowded, it's annoying, it's busy, it's whatever it happens to be. So they'll go in the other room or bark, or, you know, let me know one way or the other that we have company. So we've had to, depending on which pet, get used to that kind of stuff too. Okay, so with this, the subtle energy thing, I was reading about subtle energy. We're going for a walk, and here come the dogs, out for a walk. And at this particular space, there's nobody else on the path where we're at. And I start seeing, we call them dust devils, dirt devils, like a little tornado out in the middle of nowhere, in the middle. It can happen anywhere. But all of a sudden, the leaves, and because of the time of year, it's early, just before spring, midwinter's mostly over. So there are a few leaves on the ground. And these leaves start coming up in a little tiny whirlwind pattern, just gently. And so they're lifting gently in a circle, little vortex, off the ground. And it's moving. And it's moving along the tree line. And at that point, it might be 30 or 40 feet away from us. But I'm looking at it and watching. And at that, I knew when I saw that, that's an entity. And so I'm telling my husband, Andy, you know, vouch for me. You can see this. And yes. And so we watch it, and we watch it move along the tree line, just slow and steady. The leaves, about that, maybe 15 or 20 at that point, not a lot, just a few, to see that there's a whirlwind pattern and it's going along that tree line. So I was like, wow. Okay. And then we walk further, we walk away from it, and the little dog, Jack, turns around and he barks, and he's looking behind us. We're going the other way. But he was watching whatever it was that had followed, basically, followed along the trail and along the path alongside the tree line, followed us, paralleled us. And so that also gave me another validation. Yes, there's something that we can't see, and it is a presence, and it's a big enough or concrete, solid enough presence that the dog also sees it. So that was that one. So, and then recently, in the last few days, we went back again. And as we're walking, Andy says, somebody's watching us. And I'm thinking, well, there are deer here, even though he's really good at sensing deer or wildlife. That's one of his assets. And I thought, well, I knew if it was a deer, most likely he would have said that and mentioned it, but I just, okay, it's a deer, maybe. And then to the left of us, about 15 feet off the path, I see the leaves, and he sees the leaves. The dogs are with us. And there's two or three of them, and they start coming up from that spot, coming up. And it's probably another 15 or 10 feet over to the tree line. So it's between the path and the tree line, right there in the middle. Can't miss it. And it starts doing this little whirlwind, very gentle. And then it goes up maybe 15, 20 feet in the air. And so we're both just standing there. I'm appreciating it, thinking, wow, this is the same thing that happened before. And then it moves and it comes over and comes directly to both of us. And this is wind energy. And so this entity that is creating this vortex energy, it's like a little tornado. And we stand there and this thing goes around, and it's probably only, you know, maybe 30 seconds, 45 seconds. But we are in the middle of this little whirlwind. It's directly, intentionally on our path, and we're enveloped. And so as it's doing that, I'm saying, thank you. Because that was amazing to be there and have it intentionally move over to us on the path. Now, the next part of it, as it moved through us, then we go ahead and it stopped, it's moved. We walk forward. So I turn around to see. I watch it go back to the tree line and into the trees. There are no leaves on the trees. They're bare. And there's really, at this point, there's not much wind. So for it to just develop out of nowhere, this little tornado, to move over and in both of us, include both of us in this whirlwind, this vortex energy, and then move back to the trees. And where it moved was another 20 or 30 feet back over to the tree line behind us, where we had the direction we had come from, and into the trees. So I watched it go through the trees, and it would be like watching the path of someone walking and seeing the leaves just gently go up, up as it was making its way forward. And then I couldn't see it anymore. But that was the amazing thing, was to watch it go back into the trees, into the woods, and watch the leaves so you could see where it was going. Now, when leaves fall from the trees and the wind falls, you're going to see a little kind of a blanket activity. You don't see a direction of a line, something following a specific course when the leaves fall. It doesn't work that way. So that was, and especially when there, at this point, there are very few leaves on the trees in where we are. And so that was what I was looking at and watching and contemplating and thinking, there's a message. And that'll be another story. But that is the subtle energy. And that's what happens. And that was the clue I got about paying attention. And it's not just for me. This is what's happening for a lot of people. And there's nowhere to go with it except to say, I experienced something different. I don't know if it's real. Can you help me? And right now, there are more people who can answer those questions. This used to be considered like a shamanic type activity or encounter event. And so it was off limits to people who were just, you know, like a regular Joe. We didn't have access to the information. We didn't practice it. We didn't study it. We weren't in any way educated about these kinds of encounters and events. So fortunately, because of the last 20 some years, I've had enough of these events and enough of these encounters that I feel quite comfortable. It doesn't bother me. It doesn't scare me. It makes me thankful and grateful and curious, because there's so much more going on here. And so then I have to integrate, okay, what was the purpose and the message, and what do I need to do with it? Where do I go with this? How can I use it? What am I being asked to bring to the equation? How am I supposed to take this to the next level? How do I grow? That's what it's about. It isn't about some dynamic thing of, okay, there's, you know, it's not some big prophecy, some big holy grail revelation. It's about one step at a time, doing our own work to put the pieces of our puzzle together. And that's how we grow. So I wanted to bring that into the equation before giving you another piece of this instruction, conversation from the book, Talking to Nightlights. That's where I left off last week, or however long it was. Depending on when you're listening to these, it could have been, you know, an hour ago. I love it. It's a demonstration of timeless. You know, there is no time. I'm working on a time frame here, but when you listen, it's your time. So things are amazing. Anyway, so going back into that, the encounters I've had since then, I've learned a lot. And it hasn't lost for me the wonder. This nightlight thing still interacts. I still have the blinking, the flickering. It's a constant reminder to keep going forward, to keep listening, to keep paying attention. And sometimes it's a bit overwhelming thinking, well, there's so much going on, I'm going to miss it. What did I overlook? And there's a part of it that just says, it doesn't matter. You see what you can see and what you can work with, and that's all that counts. As long as you're paying attention and working and seeing and doing, then what you do is good enough. And that's trust. So when I'm doing the introduction to the book, I have to go back to where I was at. This is the introduction, the very beginning. And picking up with channeling requires mental, intuitive, physical multitasking. And when I finally trusted that process, learning with those groups and stuff, that helped. But this is when I was initially writing and beginning to put the equation of I can do automatic writing and put it down. At first, I was trying to correct the typos, and that was distracting. I would lose a train. And then it said, quit it. Just type and fix it later. Just get it out. And I couldn't remember it. There was so much of it that I had to write it down. So I had to do something to at least, you know, put it in concrete form and then go back and look at it. And, when I would see this stuff, I had no idea what I had written would make any sense. Then I go back and see that it was fluid and it had relevance and it had an intention, an agenda to get me to basically think outside the box. And look at the world outside this physical construct that we call reality. So now the energy stepped in to get me to leave the door open and start paying attention to my world. And that's what it still does. That statement makes even more sense when you know that my home office was across the room from our bedroom. And fortunately, my husband was a sound sleeper, or he would have been annoyed because I was so just this agog at this interactive light that was supposed to be off and it was blinking in the room next door. So, and I was trying to make sure I wasn't making it up. Every time I looked at it, it was like, okay, it's real. It's real. This is happening. This is physical. So I cracked the bedroom door and I would position myself at the foot of the bed to see the light blink on and off, you know, and I'm supposed to be sleeping. All right. So I'm obviously not getting a whole lot of sleep. And across the hallway, I would see this happen. And not just once, not twice, but several times. I would wake up. Is it still doing it? Is it still doing it? And I thought it would quit. I didn't know that this would last 20 years. At that point, I thought, oh, please, 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 just let me experience it. This is so cool. I've got this buzz. I think it's amazing. I know I'm connecting. Something wants to talk to me. Okay. So there I am. And so then I just explained at the time that I'm Wendy, a 40-something fascination with radio, and I am considered in that sense mostly sane because I'm in broadcasting and I do news and I do things that are, you know, you have to kind of follow the dots and keep a linear hold on your reality, especially when you're broadcasting news. So I had been at that point 2 decades in radio. So I had a background and I thought some kind of credibility factor that would make a difference if I went out and told people I did this. So in a way though, I'm also, or have been known to be a nonconformist. And part of that helped me stay in radio because radio isn't known to be the most secure of positions. And a lot of times you would kind of consider it like musical chairs. And occasionally you would go in and find out your chair was no longer there. And when that happened, I would usually find another chair somewhere that I liked just as good were better. But in other words, there's a lot of change and a lot of insecure element that goes along with being in broadcasting. That's just part of it. It's acting with a different kind of with a different agenda. And so with that, I was working and doing this nightlight thing. I was working at night, the night shift, and coming home and doing some of this stuff. And so there were different times of the day that would be more, I'd be have more energy. And so this was also a part of that, trying to maintain a certain kind of presence and yet being absolutely astounded by the things that were happening overnight. And people who live in haunted houses, people who live in places where the energy is completely different. You're talking the Bradshaw Ranch in Sedona, you're talking the Skinwalker Ranch up there in Utah. You're talking just when I go to Weston, a lot of the places up there are haunted, and people 9 to 5, they're still working. And they're going home or they're spending their weekends in places that completely challenge your sense of reality, of what is going on here. And that's, I think, it, at least once in your life, it's important to experience a place that doesn't play by our rules, because then you get a taste of what might be possible here beyond all of our daily drama. So I thought that this thing that was happening to me was very unique. I thought it couldn't happen to somebody who did my lifestyle. I thought you had to be born into it. That had to be some kind of a gift that was given to you through bloodline. I don't know. I was just astounded that I could have it, an experience that was so incredibly amazing. And so with this, I was, because of, I told you about my grandmother, my stuff, I'd had some interesting experiences as a kid, and I was receptive to all types of unusual psychic phenomena. It didn't scare me. For the most part, I hadn't had anything that, that made me question whether it was a very negative entity. And so what I considered, though, this wasn't a daily drama. It was an ongoing, every once in a while, I would have an instance that I knew that we were more than just this physical thing. And when I did talk to people, I talked to my grandmother. So I spoke about the thing with a nightlight or other things about that were happening in my life with my mom and my grandmother, but I didn't share it with anybody else. I didn't want anybody else to tell me that I was doing anything wrong, that it shouldn't be happening, that I was imagining it. I didn't want any negativity. So that's what I immediately did, was I shut out anything that would discount the value of what I was going through. And my mom remembers when I was a kid, the imaginary friend named Hago. And Hago stayed with me till I was about 4 or 5. One day while we were riding in the car, I told her, Hago flew out the window. And I never mentioned it again. Now, recently, in the past few years, I asked Hago to show me what he looked like. And I have a beautiful, beautiful picture. Because I only had fleeting glimpses. And so I got the picture of a little man. He's riding a fox. In the dream, the vision that I had asked for, the bird comes to the window. And it's like a robin. And so I know I've got a guess. So I look out the back of this cabin. And there is this little man. And he's about 3 feet tall. He's riding a fox. He's dressed in brown clothes, like muslin type brown boots, little boots that are like a dingo boot, and a hat. And it's a, I don't know if you would call it, it's like a barrel, you know, a round hat with a flat top and curved brim. And his skin is very leather, you know, brown, tan, leather, very worn. He's outdoor kind of little guy. And he's smiling at me with this big smile. And so when I've seen things, I've seen pictures that look like the gnomes. And so, but they're also, they call them little people. And so I just know when I got that full-blown image and impression and the smile, I remember, I mean, this is, it's the energy. It's that thing of, now you see me. Now you can remember. It was okay. And I also had to ask. I had to ask. So from there, I know Hago. And I also remember when I was a kid blocking things that scared me, changing the channel to avoid bad dreams. And if I knew it was a dream, I remember just saying, take me somewhere else. And then I found out my brother did that too. Because mom said, oh, your brother did this all the time. I thought it was me who did that. So we both figured out that little thing of, okay, get me out of here. And then a friend had asked me, and I was probably about 10 years old when this happened. We had a little overnight get together. And she asked me if I had accepted the Holy Spirit. And I remember at the time I was thinking, well, why not? Yeah. You know, it was like, what? Of course. So that was my response. Yes. And as soon as I said that, I had this incredible, all of a sudden, my whole body is warm and I'm feeling just from head to toe, this wonderful warm blanket feeling, like, wow, immersed in a hot tub. And so I remember calling it from then on. It was the glowworm experience. That's how I remembered it. And I told her, I said, wow, did you feel that? She didn't. And I don't know that she believed me, because the response I remember, it was like she didn't have the same energy toward me. What happened to me scared her. And yet to me, that was most likely what was supposed to happen. But because of her response, I didn't say anything about that. And our relationship shifted. But it was one of those things where, of all the things that would have happened, I think I was open to it. And she wasn't. But it was the trigger that I needed to know that the Holy Spirit is here. And so with that, I didn't ever talk to her about it again. I knew it didn't go down well the first time. And, you know, I'm only like 10 or 11, so there's nowhere for me to go with it. I also, when I had my wisdom teeth out, this is in the book, I had my wisdom teeth out about 14. I remember looking over the doctor's shoulder and seeing, you know, the inside of my mouth and all the stuff that's going on in there. And telling my mom when she picked me up later what I saw. And at that point, I'm like, oh my gosh, that was an out-of-body experience. I wouldn't have been able to see all the things I remembered and described unless I had been out. So this is the thing, the kind of thing. These things were part of my life. I didn't discount them. I didn't put them on a pedestal. I just considered them normal. And there's more to it. Those things are in the book. There are also some other encounters that happened that convinced me that we have guardian angels, that I know we have guardian angels. And when they need to speak up so that they can be heard, they do. And I've had two very concrete times in my life when they have spoken up. And in both instances, my life was at risk. And so I really, really appreciate knowing that when it's important, and if it's supposed to be, I will be helped and assisted. And if I can be helped and assisted, then so can anyone who listens to this show. We are not alone. We have companions. They're right here. And when we are ready, and when we ask, when we make ourselves available, they step up and say, welcome, welcome to reality, the real reality. And that's what we're doing right now. We're entering the real reality in bigger numbers. And some of this is about that ET stuff that's going on, the near-death experiences, the out-of-body experiences. When people have these experiences, they can no longer sit and say, the only thing that exists is what we see or feel, the physical, because they've had that encounter that shatters that box, that shatters that limit, that shatters that fixation and that false presence. Then they know, we know, we are more than the physical. But the next phase of this is being able to deal with that and relate to that while we are in the physical form. And we expand our awareness. We meditate. We channel. We do automatic writing. We test our precog abilities. And we play to learn and to grow. Hey, thank you for listening. I appreciate it. That was some of the stuff I read to you from Talking to Night Lights, the very beginning. Channeling energy and awakening for spiritual insight. So till next time, subtle energy. That's your homework. See what you can learn. Stay curious. See ya.